Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Curious Advantage. I'm Garrick Jones and I'm here with my co-author Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And we're joined today by the wonderful Jackie Brassey. Jackie, I'm going to ask her to introduce herself, but she is with the McKinsey Company as well as a well-known academic. And our focus today is a conversation about curiosity and confidence and neuroscientific and social. Hi, Jackie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Would you introduce yourself and tell us all these things that you do?
Sure. Yes, I have a portfolio of activities. My main job is at McKinsey & Company. I'm their Director of Enduring Priorities Learning and part of the Global Learning Leadership Team. Part-time, I'm also an academic. I'm an adjunct professor at IE University in Madrid in Spain, and I'm an affiliated researcher at the VU University in Amsterdam. Apart from that, I serve as a supervisory board member at Save the Children in the Netherlands. And as a true lifelong learner, I'm about to graduate for my master's in effective neuroscience in July.
Wow. Jackie, how do you sleep?
Yeah, good question. I still manage it, though. I guess the secret to all of this is that it all works together. So what my day-to-day job is fueled by the things that I do research complemented with what I study.
Well, we're talking with you about curiosity today, and we know a subject close to your heart and also to your work. But let's start with maybe the most difficult question first. What is curiosity? What does curiosity mean for you? And to make it easy, there is no right answer.
Yeah, thank you. That's a very important thing to say when you say there is no right answer to this, because it's possibly impossible to make a perfect answer. Curiosity can mean so many things. In my world, I'm a confidence researcher and I study emotional flexibility. I study the brain and curiosity in the work that I do. I see that more as almost a technique to regulate emotions, because if you observe something with curiosity, if you deal with situations with curiosity, you open up and you explore different possibilities. You become less defensive. You can actually accept that there are different possibilities at the end of a process. And if that is all possible, if you allow that to happen, then you also don't need to feel stressed that there's only one way and that you can only succeed if you follow one route.
So, Jackie, that's fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit more about the many paths that we can choose and how that relates to confidence? For example, do you have any stories about if you are curious about a situation or something, or you want to learn something, but maybe you are unconfident because it is a new situation or a new scenario, and you discover that there are many, many paths or way in, how does that relate to confidence and what you need to do first to overcome unconfidence?
When you feel unconfident, and we've written about this a lot also in our new book called Advancing Authentic Confidence that I've co-authored with Professor Nick van Dam and Arjen van Witloostuin, and we are launching it in the UK soon as well. The opposite of curiosity is actually potentially causing you stress, because then you think there's only one way possible, and if you do not follow that route, then you fail. Often there's a sort of a judgment coming up and you think, well, if I don't get that perfect route done, then I might fail. If you use curiosity, you stay open and you think, well, I can choose this path, I can choose that path, I can choose that path, and I can explore, and whatever outcome, it's all fine because I can learn from it. And maybe what I initially thought was the best path may become even a better path. Then you give yourself the space to learn and grow and develop. And that's the opposite of giving yourself only one way, which is it's A or B is failing, right? And that is why curiosity can be so helpful, and it can give you confidence or a sense of calm that whatever you do is fine.
Do you have some examples, for example, where this can be seen in practice?
A very practical example is, it's actually my own experience. I used to set myself up for failure in business meetings. And what my habit was, basically, I had to be perfect for a meeting. If I had to meet with senior leadership, I had to prepare perfectly. And when I'm in the meeting, I had to have everything, all the answers to all the questions that possibly came up. And I was very much self-focused, so I always felt like the spotlight was on me and every move I made was seen. But on top of it, if they then would ask a question that I didn't know, I would completely feel like I failed. What I started to do is use curiosity in those moments to observe what would happen for me. And I would also listen to the little voice in my head, but also I would use curiosity to see, you know, what colors of shirts people were wearing or what was happening in the room, taking a balcony view. That takes the spotlight off you and actually puts a bit more of the attention in the room. You engage also part of the brain that helps you then downregulate your emotions and your stress. And that's, you know, simple things. What are people wearing? What are the color of people's shoes? Or how am I feeling? And also, what are we actually doing? And also even telling to yourself, hey, that's interesting. Let's explore that, using curiosity almost as an exploration technique. You can add that is just really practical in the moment, but you can also use it in a bigger, if you look at the plans for the year and you say, you know, this year I'm going to do this and that, but I'm not sure if I should also include B and C. Giving yourself the space to actually here and there go out of your comfort zone and be okay if it doesn't go well. So if you say, you know, this year, these are my plans, and it's fine if a few of them don't work out, but at least that's one value I have. I told myself, at least I want to try, but I don't want to regret 10 years later that I never tried. And curiosity is part of that.
You mentioned, Jackie, your new book is all about authentic confidence. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by authentic confidence and how that is different, and when somebody would be acting with or exhibiting authentic confidence in the way they are and the way they work?
Sure. I get that question a lot, actually. The reason why we added the word authentic also has to do a bit with the fact that set yourself up for success rather than for failure. Because true confidence does not mean that you never are without fear. True confidence, or authentic confidence to us, and the way we describe it in the book, is all about becoming comfortable with discomfort, connecting with what's really important to you, and then taking clear decisions, taking conscious decisions that you want to move towards what is important to you. And that is all about becoming self-authoring. It's a concept from Professor Keegan from Harvard Business School, which means, you know, there are a lot of things that you can do in life. Many things might be scary, but if you know and if you choose the ones that really are valuable to you, that you really want to pursue in life, then that gives you energy to move forward and to do that. And then along the way, deal with potential insecurities or difficulties that you may face. And the authenticity is all about, you know, being okay with being uncomfortable in the moment. Like I'm now talking with you on this wonderful podcast. I'm also talking on stage often. I'm not always comfortable when I do that. Even now, I'm also, you know, there are all kinds of thoughts that tell me, you know, I hope Paul and Garrick find this interesting. I hope the audience finds this interesting. But the reason I do this is, A, I love my work, but also I find it very important we talk about these topics in the current society. And that then helps. And in that respect, I can be authentic with my insecurities and still pursue the dreams and the goals that I have.
The fascinating thing about authenticity and confidence and is how they are so vital for us to be curious. And you were talking about learning by doing or making or exploring. Could you tell us a little bit more about that idea that we learn by being in the situation, or we our curiosity is satisfied and our confidence is increased by putting ourselves in in these situations we may not be familiar with, but that we make things in order to do things. I mean, builds on the idea of the collaborative authoring. You know, we author things for ourselves, or we author our future, or we author our reality, and we may collaborate with other people to co-author scenarios, solutions, reality.
Yeah, and an important principle in that, in the co-authoring and the collaboration with others, and central to that, using curiosity, is about postponing your own judgment and postponing your own way of looking at the world and thinking there's only one way that is right. The beauty of collaborating with so many other people in teams and in organizations is that there's a lot of rich information and rich insights that can be leveraged. And often what we forget is that if we don't allow others' opinions and others, you know, insight to come to the table, then all gets lost. That is also a question of inclusion. Curiosity helps then basically to say, well, let's see what we have in the room. Let's see what is possible. And that sometimes feels uncomfortable, because it might mean in the first couple of minutes when you are in a collaboration, in a project, it doesn't go exactly as you had planned or as you had expected or as you have seen before. And using then curiosity to see what is really happening in the moment and say that that's interesting. Let's explore this a bit further. And let's postpone my own judgment and let's create the space to see what happens. That's when the magic can happen. And there are a couple of rules that are very important in that process. One organization that I have been talking with in the process for my book is Tupperware, where they work together with Georgetown University to create a culture of being okay with mistakes, basically. Mistakes can happen and we have to learn from our mistakes, basically a culture of growth mindset. And they saw not only that it really made their organization and their teams perform better, there was more innovation and more productivity, but also that increased confidence. Now, at the heart of that, to make that effective, is of course the power to be curious and to explore and to be in the moment. I would almost say curiosity is the gold skill that brings things together in this process.
I think we would agree in the Curious Advantage book, we talk about curiosity being a power skill that people need to survive and thrive.
In my view, I'm curious, before Paul asks his question, about the rules. You were talking about there's some rules.
Yeah, the rules, well, the rules are on different levels. At individual level, of course, you need to allow yourself the curiosity and being curious and being able to not know the answer from minute one and be open to others and so on. Other rules are in the organization. If we want this to happen, then we also need to give people the space to make mistakes and sometimes go down a rabbit hole and get, you know, actually encourage that it's better to make a few mistakes and never get to the answer at all. But the moment, and it has everything to do with creating safety for people. And I mean, that's at the core of neuroscience as well. I won't go into too technical detail, but there's a well-known polyvagal theory talks about how you can make yourself feel safe. The moment you don't feel safe, your brain locks down and curiosity is not so easy anymore. And so, yeah, you have to set intention for yourself that you say, okay, and also create a space. I mean, if we're having 10-hour workdays running and having call after call after call, eventually we get tired and it's more difficult. So a bit of mindfulness is important and creating space. But you can also set up meetings in a certain way where you facilitate this process to happen very easily, little principles of how you lead meetings, but also the organizational culture. So it has different levels.
When we've been researching this, Jackie, we've also found that there's a very strange connection between confidence and curiosity and similarities in the brain as to how it responds to both types of, let's say, stimulus. Have you looked into this aspect at all as to how curiosity impacts what's going on in our brain?
Yes, curiosity, actually what you... what happens if you use curiosity. As I said at the beginning, it's a sort of an emotion regulation technique. It's almost closely related to the reframing. You engage your executive part of your brain, so the part of your brain that helps you stay in control, but also helps you stay present and helps you to think calmly and being in control of the situation and logically, you know, explore what's going on in the moment. And that is another. But so what it then does, if you're able to do that, it potentially also downregulates another part of the brain, and that's often called the amygdala. It's much more complicated in the brain that I'm now explaining. But the center that activates is important when you feel fear, and that activates all kind of counter reactions. The thing is, when you are able to engage your executive center, your prefrontal cortex, your view of the world is the widest ever, basically, and you can really explore in an open way. The moment curiosity becomes less possible or is not happening and you feel unsafe, your view of the world becomes smaller. And so you can already guess what that does to the work that you do, but also to any learning that you need to do or to any innovation or creativity that you would like to bring to the table. It goes down the drain. And so it's very powerful if applied well. But as I said, I mean, you can do that for yourself, even in unsafe situations. But the best would be if the situation that you do this in is also encouraging it and almost creates an environment of play, or, you know, it's fine with whatever happens.
I was fascinated by this idea of the view of the world. You're talking about a neuroscience impact and the cortex firing in a particular way, but do you think that we can influence that state so that we can put ourselves into a state where our view of the world is safer and larger than otherwise in order to experience curiosity? Does that make sense?
Definitely. That is a set of skills that you can learn. Your personal operating model basically has to be well set. The foundational things that you have to have in place is also that you take good care of yourself, right? You sleep well, you eat well, you do you're fit. That all helps in the moment that you apply these techniques that we just talked about. And one of them is curiosity, as saying to yourself, if you become aware of a moment of stress, or if you become aware at work that you are distracted and you want to use curiosity, then it's best used when you have a foundation that is taking care, that you take care of yourself. I mean, if you sleep badly, then your brains are more susceptible to stress and to anxiety. And then also using curiosity or other emotional regulation techniques will become more difficult. But it is definitely trainable. It's what I do, and it's what I wrote about in my book. And people don't know it. But it is also, actually, I want to add to that, it is not just a simple button that you push and you have it. It is also, it takes effort. Just as if you would want to run half a marathon, most people with relatively normal health can train for that, can do it. And it's the same with training our brain. We can learn it but it takes, you know, intention, and it takes effort also to keep that in shape.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
Clearly, the first thing we all need to do is to read your book, because it's fascinating and that's going to help. But for those of us who haven't had the chance, what would you say are the big take home things that we should pay attention to in order to overcome confidence, in order to be curious, in order to approach the world in that way?
Yeah, so you're referring to overcoming insecurity, right? And to become confident.
Correct.
So what I want to mention also, by the way, there's also no risk in buying the book. It's actually only good because all proceeds will go to Save the Children. The key takeaways which was a big eye-opener for myself, because what I describe in the book is I bring together an approach from clinical psychology that is used in therapy. It's called acceptance and commitment therapy, but I'm applying it to the work context and really come. I bring a very practical set of tools that you could apply. And a big insight for me when I was on a search for this, because I, of course, wanted to deal with my own challenge. It was extremely painful when I went through this phase of lack of confidence, and it really impacted my well-being. It impacted my work, and it was the weirdest thing ever, because up till that moment, of course, I had low-grade anxiety. That's fine. That's also normal. The big eye-opener for me there, which is the core of all of the practices and content in the book, is about this openness and acceptance. It's almost about how can you go with whatever life gives you, and how can you let it be and accept that in a way. And it goes on different levels, from, you know, in the moment kind of tools versus you know, people have different ways of feeling insecure. Some people sit at home and worry about what happened yesterday and worried about the future and really are ruminating, and that causes a lot of energy loss. And others are fine with that, but they freeze when they're on stage. So there are different, and also different mechanisms behind it. But at the core of all of it, it's something I mentioned before, and we start the toolkit with that, is really understand your purpose and your values and why you do things. I mean, I'm scared of heights, but I'm absolutely not interested in climbing high mountains. It's not important to me, so why would I put myself in that pain? But other things are important to me, and for that, I'm willing to deal with the pain. Another thing, and big eye-opener for me, was when you face things. We have this saying in my language, which I don't know if it translates well, but basically it comes down to, the soup is never eaten as hot as it is served. I don't know if that works in English, but it means when you face difficult things, actually it's never that challenging. And that's the whole emotional flexibility around that, and which is this thinking. And that was, for me, you know, the first thing that you do when you feel discomfort. So, for example, you do something difficult, or you have to go, you're asked to do something in the public eye. You want the pain to go away. That is how we deal it. We just ignore it, and or we keep fretting about things. And in this book, we talk about that is not helpful, and that you embracing this and letting it be there will help you feel less pain, but also will help you to be able to continue to live your life and do your things that you want to do. And it's magic if you're authentically interested in it. So that's. It's a long answer, but that's at the core of the book.
And Jackie, you, as in one of your many roles, you're working with McKinsey, which is, as many people probably know, a globally top organization, competitive, high performing. I imagine the people working there are under a daily, let's say, pressure to be the best and to serve their clients at their utmost. How does that sort of environment, and not just McKinsey, but any organization that you've come across, where it is about performance and being the best, how does that map to this idea of wanting to be authentic and curious and open and okay to get it wrong?
So the moment insecurity comes up and confidence is challenged is when you have to do something out of your comfort zone, when you do difficult things. And we are solving complex problems everywhere in the world, not only at my organization, but also at the university where I work and other organizations. The opportunity is if you're open to that insecurity that you may experience, our research shows, we described that in the book as well, that many people in general, I'm not talking about my organization, feel that they could perform better at work if they were less afraid of making mistakes or not being good enough. One out of two says that they say yes to that. Now, all of that is holding you back from your best performance. And the first step is to acknowledging that that may be in the way, and then being able to deal with that in a positive way can help you to perform better again. Because what we also saw is if people feel this, they stay under the radar, they don't speak up, they don't lean in. And that's potentially also a risk to organizations, because you want to hear what all the talent in your organization has to bring to the table. I always talk to young recruits about this and say, this is exactly why we hired you. We want to hear everything you have to give, and it's okay. So essential is there to have the safe environment and to see that having that, you know, if you worry about something or if you are not 100% sure, that you put that to the table. We have actually, in my organization specifically, we have this obligation to dissent. That's a key value of our organization. And that means that whatever tenure you have, whatever role you have, if you think something's not right, you have the right to raise your hand and express your concerns. And that creates a space for people, not to have this elephant in the room, nobody talks about it, but to have it literally in the room and talking about it. And then you can explore and go back to the curiosity again and see how to solve the problem. I guess it's a key skill of problem solving, which is at the heart of what we do, and more organizations have the same challenge.
So, Jack, are you saying that in your research you've seen a direct link between curiosity and performance?
If you would say curiosity is at the heart of emotion regulation and acceptance and commitment therapy, so the methodology that I talk about, that's already shown that actually leads to better performance, as the example of Tupperware, but also as the example of a couple of other organizations are. Flaxman and Bond are a couple of researchers in the UK that have studied that. In my own research and very recent research that I'm writing down right now, we have actually seen, on top of, you know, emotional flexibility that leads to confidence in workers, we also saw a link with health. And that is actually, that's fascinating. We looked at the heart health, basically. We looked at vagal tone. And if people were better in regulating their emotions, not only did they feel more confident about day-to-day life, so they were better able to deal with stress, we saw an improvement in their parasympathetic nervous system or their vagal tone, which means and their heart rate variability. That's what we measured. And it's an indicator of physical health. So it's quite essential. But it's already been shown to link with performance.
So curiosity links to safety and the feelings of safety and being confident. And that has a link with the being able to be authentically confident. That also has a link with our emotional flexibility, all of which links to being able to lean in and being able to contribute and being able to explore and being able to be vulnerable. And then I'm feeling, and then fascinating for me, there's a connection between all of that and your health and your heart condition. I mean, if that's not a reason to be confident and into curiosity, I don't know what is. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it is. And as a good researcher, I always say this was the first study. There's more research needed. But there is a lot of reason to believe, actually, that that there would be. There's a lot of hypotheses and lots of theories. But that's what we found. So we definitely will continue.
The one that really is sitting with me is the one about the soup. You know, the soup is never as hot as when it is served. And I think of many things in my own life, which I've had to face, of course. And it's when you face them and you take that step that you discover that the dragons are not as, or the monsters are not as overwhelming, even though they might be catastrophic, it seems. But you learn so much from facing them and moving forward. That's my take. I don't want to reduce the whole thing to one thing. But if there's something that you would advise all of us to take home and move forward with or hold on to, what would it be for you?
I would say the first thing is learn to notice, learn to pause, and learn to just notice in the moment what's happening. That's where it starts. And that may not sound practical enough, but I guess, you know, you will find out much more if you stop running like that and you just take a moment. And then linked to that, in that moment, I mentioned it a couple of times, connect with your what's on your heart, you know, what do you want to do and what is important to you? And that gives you then the courage to take the right decisions, whatever you are doing in the moment.
And not judging. Jackie, that's one of the other things that I took away from what you've been saying. Going into something with an open mind and keeping hold of that open mind, even as things change around you.
Yeah, definitely.
Jackie, it's been a wonderful conversation. We've really enjoyed speaking with
you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I actually, one of the last things I want to add is when you said to keep an open mind and non-judging, I would say, indeed, be kind to yourself. That's very helpful. And be kind to others too.
And thank you, Jackie. That's been fascinating. And we're really looking forward to reading your next book and keeping the conversation going.
Thank you again so much for having me. It was very inspiring also for me to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and edited by John McGinty and Jill Damatak-Futter.